Woods, how are you doing?
Good. Jason Greger, how about you?
I am excellent. Now, for a long time, people have looked at ways to reduce muscle soreness after exercise, and most of us can attest to it, especially, you know what, you get out, you play some event you haven't played in a long time, and then you can't move for 3 days, and you're like, was it worth it? Well, it was worth it during, but never afterwards. But there's been two recent studies that seem to have added some new twists on things that might work. So, now, how you get sore seems pretty obvious, right? Just a variable of how we change our exercise, lifting too much weights or anything like that. And and you do want to feel sore to a point sometimes, do you not?
Right. Yeah, you do. And you hit it right on the head. So with respect to that, like anytime some variable of your exercise changes, like if the intensity gets up there, you're going to feel some muscle soreness. And more specifically, Greger, just so listeners understand, as the intensity goes up, it's the eccentric action. It's the lengthening of muscle under some stressful situation that they theorize causes the muscle soreness. And there's been some research more recently, too, that looks at how the fascial layer, that's kind of that layer that sort of encapsulates the muscle that sits underneath the skin. And for anybody who's into a lot of barbecuing and you've ever had a pork tenderloin, it's got sort of that white, like almost elastic, clear substance that you sometimes have to cut off the meat. That's the fascial layer. And it's really collagen rich. And there's been, like I say, research done that sort of talks to how maybe that elastic fiber may have a lot more bearing on our muscles getting sore as well.
Now, these new studies that have come out, first of all, it talks about a spice that could help out. Tell our listeners, what do you think of this?
Okay, so here's, first of all, I'll just got to set the stage here. So the study looked at runners at running downhill on a treadmill at 12% decline. And the reason that they had it set up with a decline is that we know with that type of running, it really does solicit that kind of muscle soreness, so they could study the effects of the spice. And the particular spice that they gave half of the running group within the study, it's called curcumin, and it's like an Indian ginger spice.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of interesting, Greger, because it has like a long history like of being an antioxidant and being sort of, or having anti-inflammatory quality. And it was interesting, like after they did like the blood tests, they could see that there were levels of what we call creatine kinase in the blood samples. And in half the runners in this study, after their runs, the first time they tested, the levels of creatine kinase were quite low versus the other half of the runners where they were just given a placebo, the creatine kinase was quite high. So when we see those levels high, that's a biomedical marker to show that there's been more muscular damage as a result. Okay, so fine and dandy. They keep on doing a few more runs within the study, and our spice group, nothing had changed. Like the intensity of their runs hadn't changed, but this creatine kinase had actually gone up in them. But for the group who was on the placebo, like taking nothing, they actually went down. So it seemed like this spice had actually somehow inhibited the adaptive phase of the exercise. So they weren't really any further ahead. They were further ahead for short-term pain management, but as far as actually adapting to the stress of the running and getting stronger, it didn't seem to help that. So that would be the downsides to taking that type of spice to help your pain.
Interesting. And it really kind of, I think, falls in line with what's a big issue nowadays is we seem to take pills or different things that mask the problem but don't ultimately solve it.
No. And here's the thing, Greger. I mean, we're going to jump around a little bit here, but physiologically speaking, when, you know, we're training to get stronger or faster or just become better athletes, your body physiologically needs a certain amount of time to adapt to any new stress. Like, you can't speed that up. Like, it's impossible. Now, of course, outside of performance-enhancing drugs, steroids I'll talk about specifically, that can expedite the process at some level, but obviously it's illegal for competition and sport and so on, and it can be quite dangerous if you don't know what you're doing for any young athlete, so it's not a direction we want to take. So I think for people to understand that you have to allow for recovery week to week between your workouts, and you also have to be looking at long-term rest within a year, within months, so that you don't overtrain and actually go the wrong way. And I think this is part of the thing that you're driving at here. People just think that they have to recover faster, work out more often. They're going to get, you know, they're going to lose body fat, or they're going to be able to just train harder to become more competitive in their sport. But it can actually work against you. So honor the amount of time necessary to recover and adapt to your stress.
Jeff Woods from Custom Fit joins us. Now, what about the antihistamines? What do they do?
Okay, this is kind of interesting with the antihistamines. So typically we would take antihistamines, you know, for an allergic reaction, a stuffy nose, or to mask the symptoms of a cold or something like that. So they work like a vasodilator so you can breathe. And they would be sort of a mild anti-inflammatory. So this study, the athletes, again, were running, and the same sort of protocols, and they would give the athletes the antihistamines, and they sort of had the same results as far as body pain after their runs. But the same sort of thing started to take place, that it kind of masked the symptoms of pain, and the athletes would go back to work intently again, maybe a little bit too quick, and it seemed to interfere again with the adaptation process and do muscular damage. So long term, it didn't prove to be beneficial, but obviously there's still lots of research to be done in this area, and who's to say where it goes. But to this point, it would look long-term like it's not a benefit outside of pain management.
Okay, so short-term gain to alleviate the pain, you might want to do it once, but long-term it's not going to have any sort of benefits for you. Now, muscle soreness is going to be something that people deal with at different times. When's the right time to know if your muscles are sore, and if you go work out or do a light thing the next day, that it's not going to do any damage to it, or it'll actually enhance it?
Right. So, okay, with respect to that, if you've got muscular pain to the point that you cannot function, like you can't sit down on the toilet, or you're having a really tough time, you know, getting up and down from a chair, by no means should you go back into the gym and work out, or should you try and go for a run. Your muscles are in a state of repair, and all you're going to do if you try to train when they're in that state, you're going to make the situation worse, and then it could turn into a chronic problem. So you should be pain-free at rest, and you should be able to like squat with your body weight through a full range of motion with virtually no pain or discomfort. Then I would say that it would be an appropriate time to go back and do your training.
Now, what's the definition, though, of pain and soreness? Because soreness isn't necessarily pain sometimes.
Well, here's the thing.
Because I find when I warm up, then suddenly the soreness is gone.
Yeah, no, you're right. As you elevate body temperature, so let's look at that specifically. Around every joint site in your body, there is a synovial sac. As that joint starts to move more frequently, the synovial sac will secrete some fluid that lubricates the joint sites. And as your body temperature goes up through the muscular systems, there's actually less resistance. And it's the myofibrils, or the muscle fibers, that start to slide and react over top of one another with less friction as your body temperature goes up. It's just like the oil in your car. As the oil circulates throughout the pistons and the motor, there's less friction, so it feels better. So it sort of works the same way in your body as your core temperature goes up. It does not mean, Gregor, that you have had a significant repair of muscle fiber. All it means is that the symptoms have been masked ever so slightly because your temperature has gone up. So with respect to that, understand that once you sort of break down fibers in a weight workout, I'll say, you know, typically in 72 hours, like 3 to 4 days, you know, at its very worst, you should be feeling pretty good after that point. If you haven't done maximal effort lifting, you know, and you're a little bit sore, you know, probably in 24 to 48 hours, you could hit another muscle group within your body somewhere and have an effective workout without doing any damage. But in many respects, Gregor, it's a common sense thing. If you can't move, I mean, it's not a good time to go back into the gym.
Yeah, I get that. That's fair. Right? Like, you obviously want to be, like, you're going to have to push yourself. You're going to have some soreness, but then the next day, maybe you go in and you work a different body part.
Yep, absolutely right. And that's what competitive bodybuilders do as a rule. They work what we refer to as a split routine. So they'll work maybe one or two muscle groups on one day, and then maybe in the upper body, and then they'll work something on the lower body the following day so they can work out four times or five times over the course of the week. But if you're the individual who's working out two or three times a week and doing sort of a full body hit, you don't really have that luxury, you know, because you might have more than a couple of muscular systems that are sore. But in that case, you could pick another activity. Light aerobic activity, for example, or cycling on a bike would be non-weight bearing, a little easier. And I'm sure you would be able to work through it.
Woods, as always, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Okay, sounds good, Gregor. Take care.